Hey, hey.
Hey, 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 hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hello and welcome to the Cult Cast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. My name's Arifon Elijah. I'm here with L. Caney. Hey, Leander.
Hey, Arifon.
I'm here with Buster again. Buster Hine. Hey, Buster.
Hello.
You guys sound great.
New headphones, new attitude, new week.
New attitude?
I'm especially a fan of the new attitude.
That's all the good news about all the listeners we have. So,
let's talk about that for just a couple seconds. Thank you for everyone who has downloaded. We had a fantastically good week last week. We had two episodes. If you missed them, I recommend that you download them. We talked about all sorts of stuff, the new iPad, Steve Jobs, that monologue about Steve Jobs from Mike Daisy and the controversy around that. So if you guys have missed episode 4, episode 4.5, I would recommend that you download that or download those. We have a mixed bag show today. We're going to be touching on all sorts of topics, and I'm excited for this show. You know, normally I'd say our show is probably, if we're honest, like a 1.5 out of 10. but this week, I think we're going to hit a solid 5 out of 10.
Oh.
All right.
Don't hold me to that, though. And I wanted to start with just a few short, small, fun topics. Did you guys know 15 years ago, Apple was 2 months away from bankruptcy? Did you guys know that?
I didn't know it was 15 months ago, but I knew that happened.
Well, 15 years ago.
15 years ago,
yeah,
I mean.
Apple was 2 months away from bankruptcy. Now, admittedly, I wasn't a huge Apple fan back then. But Leander, you probably were, right?
Yeah, but what's this 2 months from bankruptcy? I mean, the number I've seen bandied around was that when Jobs came back, it was like 6 months from bankruptcy. So I guess you're taking the date when Jobs returned, taking 4 months away from that and ending up two, yeah?
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm just going off of things that I've read, but I mean, as far as the actual months, I mean, it could have been 1 month, it could have been 10 months, but I think what's kind of more important than that is the fact that here Apple is, their stock price is, you know, bobbling up and down above and below $600, and 15 years ago, they were almost bankrupt. I mean, Steve Jobs came back and took this company from something that was about to be, you know, put out of business into this gigantic, you know, streamlined company that we know today that has all these amazing products and looks like their stock price may, you know, be going over $1,000. Leander, when you were, you know, younger, when you back 15 years ago, when you were in your 40s,
yeah,
you know, like did you were a pretty big Apple fan, right? I mean, you were following them then, is that right?
Well, I was working for Mac Week, and you know, Apple fan, maybe. I guess. You know, I mean, I was. I had a you know, I had Apples, and I've always had Macs. You know, I had a Mac since the first Mac back in '84. My dad had one. You know, so as a kid, we grew up using the original Mac. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I had them. I wouldn't say I was a fan, though. You know, like the company then was run by a really weird bunch of strange freaks and clowns. And, you know, at that time before Jobs came back, I mean, they had, you know, they'd just gone through Spindler and Gil Emilio was in charge. And Emilio is like,
he was the Pepsi guy, right?
No, that was Scully. John Scully was the Pepsi guy. And he was actually the one, you know, who had the most charisma out of all these different turkeys. And, you know, the one, Emilio was, you know, he was almost he's the opposite of Jobs. He was completely uncharismatic, you know, and just unfocused and sort of, they were all over the board. They had all kinds of crazy ideas. They were going to open up Apple cafes. They're going to open up some kind of Disneyland ride or something like that. There were all these bizarre things going on.
Can you imagine an Apple theme park? I have no idea what they'd put it in.
I want to go there.
Yeah, I think it makes sense now, but at the time it was totally nuts. And of course, you know, like they had no you know, there was no they had no presence in stores or in mindshare. You know, everyone knew that the company was really in deep trouble. They just recorded the biggest loss in American corporate history. They lost almost $1 billion in one quarter, and that's actually what led them getting rid of Scully. But it was like, it was a real mess. I mean, and there were some fans, and the fans actually were going into stores like Sears and Circuit City or wherever you could buy Macs those days. And the Macs were always at the back of the store. They were dusty, you know, they wouldn't be turned on, or they would have crashed or something. So all these volunteers would go into the stores, and they'd spend the whole weekend there, like as unofficial volunteer salespeople trying to steer people, you know, who were looking for a new computer to the back to, you know, hey, why don't you check out a Mac? It's twice as expensive as all the other computers in here, but, you know, you really want to get one.
And so, it's just as beige, too, at the time. I mean, right? Their computers were still looking like everyone else's.
Right, yeah. Odd times.
It's amazing. And now we have a story like this. So last episode, we talked a little bit about that game that has gotten immensely popular. It was called Draw Something, right, Buster?
Yep.
And it's been out for, 7 weeks? And I just read that the company that makes that game, OMG Pop, has been bought by what's that other really huge game company? Zynga. For $200 million.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And their app, the Draw Anything app, is making $250,000 a day after Apple's cut, just selling that one app. So we went from that, where Apple was about to go out of business, where just one piece of their business is making somebody else $250,000 a day. It's insane. So it's really come a long way since then, and now we have our amazing new iPads, which I want to talk a little bit about, too. I don't want to talk too much of this episode about them, because we've already done that so much the last two episodes. But there's been some angst and some complaints going around that the iPad is running a little hot. The new iPad is, with the A5X chip. Have you guys heard anything about this, Leander?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the Consumer Reports was trying to sort of cash in with this, you know, the new antenna gate. Your iPad might, kind of cause a slightly warm up your hand.
You pretty much said that perfectly. Buster, have you heard anything about this?
Yeah, I think it's just the most ridiculous story. I mean, I just think it's overblown. Sure, maybe it's running 10 degrees hotter, but...
Well, to be precise, so the Wall Street Journal, I think it was the Wall Street Journal, did an article about this, and they said that the regular iPad runs at 96.8 degrees Fahrenheit, and... I'm sorry, that's the new iPad. 96.8 degrees Fahrenheit. The old iPad with the A5 chip runs at 80.6 degrees Fahrenheit. So you're literally talking about a difference of 16.2 degrees.
Exactly. But and this is degrees Fahrenheit. Plus, yeah. You know, 96 degrees is body temperature.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, you're not going to get a burn if you put your hands on somebody's skin. You're not going to get...
In fact, if you put your MacBook Pro on your lap, it will make you sterile if you're playing games on it. Like, that's the thing that gets hot, right? I mean, really hot. So I guess my question is, you know, like, every time a new Apple device comes out, we hear these ridiculous stories about these problems that I feel like are so silly and small. Why do you think that the media keeps latching on to these things, you know, when they're not really a big deal? Buster, what do you think?
Well, I mean, you got Apple's in the spotlight, of course, so that's a huge thing. Also, you know, you got news media outlets. Maybe they're just bored for the day and, oh, it's running 10 degrees hotter. Maybe they don't think it's like this huge thing and it just snowballs because of the internet now and it gets out of control and it's just ridiculous. Like the last two people that I've talked to in the real world who are like, oh, you have the new iPad. Yeah. Oh, are you having any heat issues with it? And I'm just like, oh my gosh.
You're like a person who has absolutely no idea about technology at all. And they don't even own an iPad. They're like, oh dude, I heard that had heat issues.
Yeah.
And you're like, do you own an iPad? And it really does remind me, it's reminiscent of the antenna gate quote unquote problem, which as soon as it came up, I thought was so stupid. I was like, are some people having legitimate problems? Probably. But I think for most people, they weren't even having any problems. I mean, I know in San Francisco, the signal is really bad, right, Leander? So you actually could lose reception.
And it, there was a pretty graphic demonstration of what was going on. If you put your finger across the gap, you could see your bars, you know, drop to nothing, right. And it would actually drop calls. So, I tested this, so that was actually like initially, anyway. It was oh wow, you know, this looks like, because it was a brand new antenna that was on the outside of the device. It did look like, oh wow, this may be an issue. This yeah. may be a, you know, this could be, you know, serious trouble for this new for the iPhone, because, you know, maybe they didn't you know, realize that this was going to be trouble in the real issue. In the real world. Yeah, right. So I think initially that one did look like an issue, and then of course, you know, Consumer Reports piled in with a pretty what appeared to be a pretty devastating report, and then, you know, I mean, Jobs, he was on Hawaii at the time on vacation, and he flew back to do that impromptu press conference, and they did actually a pretty masterful job of admitting of showing that all smartphones have this issue. It's like, it's actually an antenna issue that is
right
common to totally. Every device.
Yeah,
but no one had noticed before. You know, no one had really noticed. This is the first time that people, you know, had really noticed that the way you hold it
actually, you know, makes a difference.
It does make a big difference, right?
Well, I tested it here in Seattle. I mean, and you know, in San Francisco, I think it would make much more of a difference because you have, you know, signal issues to begin with. Well, here in Seattle, you get great signal no matter where you are. So I did it, and I saw the bars drop one or two times, and I literally could not make it drop a call. There was no way me touching the phone, caressing it in any manner, would make it, you know, hang up. And I do caress my phone. And I couldn't get it to you know, have any problems at all by doing that. So I think really a lot of it was just kind of contextual. It's like, it really mattered where you are. Would you agree?
Yeah, right. That totally makes a difference. And here, you know, in San Francisco, where the airwaves are clogged, you know, there are so many people here, and there's so many iPhones that, yeah, you know, you need all the bars you can get.
Yeah, every time I call you on your phone, there's always a delay, and it always sounds like the audio quality is degraded in the same way. Like AT&T is just compressing it as much as they physically can in order to get that signal to be as small as possible.
Right.
I just want to say, I don't know if that's actually the way it works.
What?
some like telecom engineers, like, compressing what? He's like, we don't even do that. Well, hey, this actually is a real problem, and I want to talk a little bit about this. So people who are ordering iPads with the LTE option are quickly realizing that you can burn through your data cap very quickly. And Wall Street Journal recently published an article about this, calling it a speed trap. And I think this is going to be a major problem. So basically the problem is according to Verizon's own estimates, when you're playing a video, a high-quality video via LTE, you are going to be burning about 650 megabytes an hour. Mm-hmm. That's double the amount of data used when you're streaming the same video over 3G. Because it lets the data pipes are fatter and let the data move faster, so you get a higher quality video usually. That means in about what, you know, 3 hours, 3.5 hours, depending on what plan you have, you could be totally out of data for the entire month. So it's kind of a catch-22, right? So now we have these really fast devices where you can get, you know, 2, 3, 5 gigabytes of data, depending on how much money you want to fork over. But you could be burning through that data in a week. I mean, even less than a week if you're a moderately, you know, heavy user. Do you guys think this is going to cause, you know, major issues for the telecoms?
What do you mean major with the telecoms, or yeah, just, well, like a lot of angst?
Well, it's going to cause angst, I think, for sure, right? Because if you're paying for a 2 gigabyte plan and you figure out that in 1 week you're out of data and you got to start forking money over to Verizon or AT&T or whomever. Like, aren't you going to get super pissed? I would. Well, yeah,
of course. But I don't know. I don't think it's a problem for the carriers because they're making money off of it. So they probably love it, you know?
They are making money off it. I agree. But don't you think that at a certain point that they're going to have to adjust, you know, what their bandwidth allowances are? Because, you know, if you're running out of data, I mean, before, if you purchased a 3G data plan and it lasted you all month, or you were kind of hitting the cap towards the end of the month, no big deal, right? It's like, you know, at least it made it for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and then it reset itself. If you're running out of data in 1 week and you have to keep forking over, you know, more money to AT&T and Verizon, don't you think enough people are going to start having problems that AT&T, Verizon are going to need to reconsider their data caps? Do you think it's going to make any difference?
I don't think so. I mean, you have AT&T and Verizon that, you know, those plans are structured so that they keep you off of their networks, actually. They want you to be using Wi-Fi more than right. your LTE. So that's one thing. And I don't know why they would. I mean, they might. It would be really nice of them, you know, to boost it up and give us 5 gigs at the 2 gigabyte price point. But I don't know if they're just going to jump on that train and just be like, oh, okay, you know, we'll do that now. That they'll just offer bigger plans, I think, to start out with.
So they'll say, oh, here's our solution. You can now buy a 10 gigabyte plan for $100. Because a 5 gigabyte plan right now, 5 gigabytes, paltry amount, is $50 a month. And you can arguably burn through that in 2 weeks. I mean, my Comcast bill, which has a 250 gigabyte cap, is only $40 a month. Leander, what were you going to say?
Well, one hour of HD video is 2 gigabytes.
Yeah, so there's your plan right there.
Right, and you could watch a movie and exactly you'd run right over it. And that it looks like the maximum plan on Verizon is 10 gigabytes a month, right?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was 50. Maybe that
there's
was just AT&T.
10 gigabytes for 80, I believe, on Verizon.
Yeah, right. And I think AT&T caps that at 5.
Yeah.
So, and of course, you know, they used to offer unlimited plans for everybody and no more. So, you know, 5 gigs and then that's your max. And then after that, you have to pay, what is it, $10 a gigabyte?
Yeah, something crazy.
Think over the top. Like, yeah, so I think a lot of people are going to be running over their plans. I mean, that journal article you mentioned, they talked to a couple of people that ran out of their, you know, they went through their monthly plan within the first couple of days of getting their iPad.
Yeah, yeah. It's insane. Yeah. I mean, here are Verizon's plans. It's $20 for 1 gig a month, 30 for 2, 50 for 5, 80 for 10. And then, Leander, you're right. If you go over, it's $10 per extra gigabyte. So, I mean, you could go to a movie at a movie theater, buy a popcorn, and watch a full movie in 3D, no less, for $20. Or you could watch a YouTube video on your iPad.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, something's definitely going to give. I mean, that this is going to have to change. And I'm not an expert in this, but I suspect it has a lot to do with. I mean, they capped data on the old 3G networks because the iPhone and the iPad and all the other smartphones, you know, were clogging the airways, right? Mm-hmm. But now we're moving to LTE, so this is a network with much higher capacity, 10 times the capacity, right, of the old 3G networks.
Mm-hmm. So, and 10 times the speed, right? Yeah.
Right. So does that mean that the old data caps should apply to this new network? I mean, they're still offering that, you know, they're trying to apply the same data caps, you know,
at a better network.
On a better network.
It doesn't work out that way. And you're right. Something has to give. I just don't think it's going to happen within the next, you know, 6 to 12 months.
Well, I guess that's kind of my point is the data limits have always been paltry. And they've always been expensive, but now that you are able to burn through them in a day if you want, it really highlights how poor the data caps are. And, you know, if you can get 10 times the bandwidth, you would think that Verizon and AT&T would give a little and be like, okay, hey, we're going to increase it a little bit. Because this is, in my opinion, it's a money grab. It's like, hey.
Yeah, right.
Right? Oh, like, we're going to have a faster network, but we know people are going to run through it.
They've got billions and billions of dollars in investment. They've got to recoup. So they are going to squeeze us for, you know, everything a while.
Yeah,
you're right, unfortunately. But, you know, you think about it, it's like, you know, we've already been paying these data limits forever.
Right.
Like, I'm paying AT&T $30 a month for data. And, you know, if for every device you have, it has to have its own separate data plan. And
right.
It's but like they've already been making that money from us.
No, because they were doing that for the 3G networks. So they are trying to recoup all of that they invested in the 3G network. Now, what Leander's saying is now they got a 4G network. They have to pay for what they built. And so they're going to squeeze you for everything they can on the 4G network now because the 3G network only paid for itself.
See, but I think that's the farce. That's the farce. They're like, oh, hey, guys, we totally got to recoup our building cost. That's why. When in reality, they use the 3G profits to build 4G. And they're like, and they really are just like, let's squeeze every last drop of blood from every stone we can.
Yeah.
And then we can have enough money to build our own wired fiber network like Verizon is doing.
Well, I mean, that's. That's how business works, you know? I mean, you try to make the most amount of money for the least amount of effort.
And I'm okay with that in regards to my own business, but when it comes to AT&T and Verizon, it really chaps my hide.
Well, eventually it's gonna get cheaper, because if you look at what's going on in Europe, you know, you can get really awesome 4G data.
Oh my gosh.
But next to nothing. And people will buy, you know, like they cancel broadband, they cancel their landlines, they buy like a MiFi wireless Wi-Fi, you know, device, and they'll use that for all of their networking at home. Everything comes over the cell phone network, you know, HDTV, all the computers at the house, their cell phones, their iPads. There's this one guy in Vienna who was telling me it's like, I don't know, 14 megabits a second he gets.
I get 22 on my iPad with the LTE. It's ridiculous.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah.
Yeah, you slurp up that data, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
You'll be forking over those $10 gigs in no time.
He's paying $7 a month or something, flat rate.
Oh, geez.
So I was in Austria this last summer, and same story. Leander, you can get an iPhone 4. Tethering's free. The plan was $30 a month that came with unlimited data. It also came with like 2,000 or 3,000 minutes. And you could use the phone in a bunch of their partner countries. You could go to like Italy. You could go to – I forget the other countries that you go to. But there was like 5 or 6 of them. And your minutes worked there. There was no roaming. And then here in the U.S., it's like, my gosh, what country are we in? I think the only country that has it worse than us is Canada. Canada really does have it the worst. For all of our Canadian listeners, I am very sorry about that. Hey, let's move on. I just want to mention quickly one last iPad thing, though. I was reading an article, I think it was by John Brownlee, one of our writers, that said your iPad may not be fully charged, even though the battery meter says it's fully charged. Did you guys read that article?
Yeah.
It was really good, because one of the things I've been really concerned about with the iPad is charging times. And I have been charging my iPad overnight, but the other day I charged it overnight, and for some reason in the morning it was still only 75% charged, and it had stopped charging, which I thought was curious. But then I plugged it in within, you know, 30 minutes, it was fully charged, and I was like, how did this thing charge so fast? So I think this may actually have been the deal. And basically what the article said is, there's this doctor named Raymond Sonera, and he works for DisplayMate Technologies, and he says that even though the iPad says it's fully charged, it's actually not, and it will continue charging for up to an hour after the battery says it's at 100%. And this is the same way it works with a lot of different devices. So if you're looking for the best battery life, make sure you leave your iPad charged in, and that way your batteries will be fully charged, at least for an hour after it's done. Have you guys noticed, or have you tried charging your new iPad with any of your like third-party charging systems at all? Hello.
I was waiting for Buster to go first. Go ahead, Buster.
I don't have a third-party charging system, so I couldn't answer.
Oh, Leander, do you have one?
Yeah, I've got an alarm clock, an iHome alarm clock that I plug it into at night, and
does it work?
Well, you know, I usually pass out drunk, and in the morning, I wake up with a hangover, and the thing's fully charged. So I honestly haven't sat there and watched it charging. You know, I mean, I've got better things to do, buddy. But
well, I plugged mine into some of my third-party chargers, and it would not charge. It would only charge when I plugged it in with the OEM Apple cable into the OEM Apple charger that it came with, which I thought was curious, because
what kind of Stone Age accessories have you got?
I just got it was an iDapt i4 charger, which is great. It's a great charger, and it worked on my iPad 2 just fine. And so for some reason, all of a sudden, it doesn't work on my iPad 3. So I'm a little worried that third-party devices may not be compatible with the iPad 3.
Well, I've had this issue forever with all my old iPhones, you know, all the charging cable, all the, you know, in the car, auto, you know, the cigarette lighter charges. Mm-hmm. Those things, you know, from one generation of iPhone to the next, they wouldn't work. And I'd also get the, you know, this charging accessory isn't supported, you know, when I got the iPhone 4 and I plug it into some of the old accessories too. But I haven't had that so far. Is that really a common issue, do you think?
I hope not. And that's kind of what I'm wondering. Maybe it's just my iPad and maybe no one else is having it.
We should look into it. That's a good idea for a story.
Yeah. So if you're listening and you're having the same problem, ping us on Twitter. We'll have our Twitter addresses at the end, so stay tuned for those. Let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about Mountain Lion, which comes out this summer. There have been developer releases coming out, and I was reading a review on Ars Technica, a great site, and they were saying that some of the developers that are using it have noticed that the icons in Messages, the Messages app, are double resolution, which would indicate that we're going to be seeing a Retina display in either a MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro sometime in the near future. And, of course, the Worldwide Developers Conference is in June, what, June 6th or something?
Yeah.
So it's coming up. Do you guys think that we're going to see, you know, a Retina display in some type of MacBook product in the next 6 months? Leander, what do you think?
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah.
You think so?
Because the lowest resolution screen on all of your Apple devices is, you know, the one with the largest screen, your iMac and your MacBook. So they're definitely going to upgrade them.
Do you think it's going to be like included, you know, as just a regular feature? Or is it going to be something where they're like, you can get a normal screen or get the Retina display for an extra $200? Buster, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think they'll be coming out with Retina display Max.
But do you think that they're going to charge to upgrade to a Retina display as a feature, or is it going to be something that's just included?
I don't know. That's a tough call. I mean, they've done that in the past, haven't they, where it's you get a better screen option for like $100
they do.
They
charge you, I think for the 15-inch, they charge you for a high-resolution display.
Yeah, and I could see that, you know, being the case, because not everybody's going to be like, oh, I need all those pixels, you know.
How awesome would this be? I think that we're going to see a Retina display soon, too. I mean, obviously, Apple's going to unify this Retina display across all their products because it's amazing. It's resolutionary, right? To use a Steve Jobs word.
Totally resolutionary. Yeah.
Resolutionary.
Even though we decided last week that it actually wasn't that resolutionary.
Yeah, that's right.
All of us, none of us have got the eyes to tell the difference, right?
I that should have been Steve Jobs' last word when he was on his when he was there, he was taking his last breath. He should have whispered that. That would have been fantastic. But how awesome would this be? We talked last week about, or was it the week before? I think it was episode 4, about how the MacBook Pros might be going away, and Apple's going to combine the MacBook Pros with a MacBook Air type product. So you'll have the lightweight, you know, MacBook product, but they might also include like high performance models, so they'll have powerful graphics. How cool would it be to have a 15-inch MacBook Air that was lightweight, had a Retina display? And of course, DVD drives are going away entirely, right? So it doesn't have a DVD drive, but instead it has an SSD. So it's super fast to load the operating system. You can use it for like applications and stuff. But it also includes a regular hard drive. So you still have the storage because if you're getting a high performance graphics chip, you probably are going to be using video and photos. You need a place to keep all that stuff.
Are you just dreaming stuff up right now?
I'm literally dreaming this up with a purpose. Do you think it's gonna be called?
Is it gonna have an Ethernet port and like a FireWire too?
Yeah, you've heard about this too. Actually, yeah. That's a good point. It does need to keep those two. It's gonna be called the MacBook Air Pro.
No,
are we gonna see? Are we gonna see the MacBook Air Pro at WWDC, Leander?
No,
come on, guys. It's a great idea.
No, it's a terrible idea. The name sucks, first off.
MacBook Afro.
I'm just saying I would buy a MacBook Air Pro because it's exactly what I need. It's small,
it's portable. Awful.
It sounds resolutionary to me.
It has a VGA port. And
yeah.
DVD drive that's miraculously tiny than the other one.
I can really use a floppy disk drive, too, for backwards compatibility.
Yeah, no, there's no way they're going to, you know, put out some horrible Frankenstein's monster like that.
Yeah,
it's going to be, you know, the MacBook Air with a 15-inch screen.
Okay, all I'm saying is I'm going to clip what you just said. There's no way. And I'm going to put it back on a loop, and I'm going to keep playing it in the episode when we're talking about the MacBook Air Pro. And I'll be like, hey, what do you guys think about it? There's no way. There's no way. But let's okay. And I'm just going to keep interrupting you with that.
Fair enough. That's the case, but I think we should get a loop of you predicting they're going to.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I'm the one that does the editing, so that's not going to happen. So let's move on. I want to talk about a couple of Apple-esque topics that are more like just I want to get your opinions on. The first one is the post-PC revolution. This has been something that you hear all the time now. It's like Leo Laporte was talking about it on his show. I've been reading articles about the post-PC revolution. And I got to thinking, is the post-PC revolution real? Is it a real thing? Or is it just something that media outlets have created to get people to read their articles and stuff and listen to their shows? Like, are we going to see a mass movement of people going to iPads and iPhones and leaving their actual real, you know, keyboards and, you know, screens behind in favor of these devices? Buster, what do you think?
Well, first, post-PC revolution, that wasn't termed by the media. That was termed by Jobs.
Yeah, so but Jobs has mind control over the media.
No, definitely. But yeah, I think definitely the majority of the public will. I'm not saying everybody's going to, you know, throw away their desktop, but I'm saying that the majority of your computing in, you know, 10 years will be done on smaller devices. I think that's a given.
Smaller devices with or without keyboards?
Yeah.
So what about without keyboards? Like, would you move?
Yeah.
If you had the option to move to a really cool iPad device with no screen and use it as your primary computing device, is that what you'd do? Give up your MacBook Air?
If that's possible, if it's possible to do everything that I need on a Mac or on an iPad like device, then yeah. I mean, our reviews editor Charlie, he wrote the entire Mobile World Conference coverage from his iPad. He didn't even need his Mac.
That's true, but he also attached it to a Bluetooth keyboard, so he still got the benefits of both worlds.
Yeah, but I mean, that wasn't like an actual absolute necessity, the keyboard. That just made it faster, but, you know.
We should do a CES challenge where we all bring our iPads only, and every post we do is with our thumbs typing out our articles. Leander, what do you think? Post-PC revolution?
Absolutely, yeah. You can see it happen all around you. There's evidence everywhere. It's, you know, laptop keyboards, desktop computers, laptops with keyboards are going to look like key punch machines. They're going to look antiquated. They're going to look ridiculous. People are going to be going like, you still use a keyboard? Oh my God, you know, living in the 1880s. And this is going to happen in a couple of years. Wow. You know, the reason people are still using a keyboard is because Siri still sucks. But as soon as voice dictation, you know, is fast and reliable, the keyboard is going to go away. The keyboard is an artifact of the typewriter, 150-year-old technology. The reason computers are the way they are is because, you know, they morphed from typewriters. You know, look at Mad Men, the way offices were set up in the 60s. And they just recreated that, you know, in the digital era with, you know, with electronic keyboards. And IBM, you know, has a lot to do with this and their business, you know, maintaining their business. But, we're going to go to touchscreen and dictation and maybe sort of like connect like technology where, you know, the machine can follow your movements and gestures that are made in a 3D space. And it's going to happen really fast. And Mike Elgin did a great column about this on Saturday on the site where he was talking about iPhoto, the revelation of using iPhoto on his new iPad and how much better it was for photo manipulation to use a multi-touch interface. Like, it just seemed really peculiar to do it with a mouse and a keyboard. It wasn't a natural way to deal with photographs. And this is like, you know, everything from editing to importing, editing, and sharing. It's all naturally done with your fingers. It's great. And he's like, you know, I can't wait until they come out with a really big iPad so I can have a much bigger screen. I can do a lot more things. And that's the problem, I think, is, you know, like the software so far is we're just getting started. People are just seeing the possibilities with what you can do with these new input paradigms. But in the next couple of years, it's going to be like, you know, my mom was just here earlier. We were talking about my mom. She just got her first iPad, you know, last week, and she already thinks it's much better for sharing video. She loves to do video, and like now the iPad is her go-to machine for video. And it won't be long before it's true for all the other things she does too.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I think especially for people like your mom, like my mom, the iPad is that post-PC device. I mean, Steve Jobs, I know, always wanted to create a device that wasn't a computer, but it was more just like, you know, like an appliance.
Right.
And the I feel like with the iPad, he really accomplished that, and especially so for people who aren't super technological and don't want to mess around with managing a computer. There are a few problems, I think, that need to be solved. I think the keyboard is a huge one. I love using my trackpad, too, especially for editing photos. I haven't tried iPhoto yet. That's another issue that needs to be figured out. And another big one that I was talking about with my friend the other day is storage. I mean, you start putting HD video on your 16 gigabyte iPad, and soon your mom's going to be calling you, and she's going to be like, "Leander, come fix my iPad."
Yeah, but you don't do that. You store your movies in the cloud.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, you have super fast wireless networks and Wi-Fi, so why would you want to store it on your hard drive when you could access it from any device?
For one reason, I mean, downloading and uploading speeds are abysmal in those places.
You're too
but that's going to improve. And then
none of AT&T and Verizon have anything to do with it.
AT&T
and Verizon wants you to use the cloud at $10 a gigabyte. They would love it. They're all for the cloud. Yeah, use the cloud. Are you kidding me? Store your movies there. Oh, you want to upload that home movie? Yeah, for $29.95, we'll do that. No problem. I agree. I think we are moving in that direction, but I think it's going to be a little slower than maybe 2 years. Like, I think there's big problems like the networking issue. The SSD, the small storage sizes available to these iPads, they may just be a stepping stone where you need to store stuff on your iPad until the cloud is ready. But who knows how long that could be? I mean, I don't feel like the bandwidth issues in the United States get solved quickly.
Okay, I think, LTE is an amazing step up. It's like a super and, the cost aside, but I think technologically, in terms of speed and coverage, it's going to be like Wi-Fi. It's going to be ubiquitous.
Yeah, from what I've seen of the download speeds, especially, I've been pretty amazed so far.
Right, and Wi-Fi, of course, is pretty widespread already. And I think in 2 years maybe a bit ambitious, but look at the difference with the iPhone 4S now and the original iPhone, which came out in 2007, and you look at the difference of 4 or 5 years, and look how that look how it is. Has changed, everyone's lives. I mean, now more people have a smartphone than have a regular phone. And looking at a regular phone, you just look at it and you go, it's so ridiculously antiquated. How could anybody possibly,
It's terrible.
It's the world is. Well, yeah. That's actually, a sort of snooty thing to say, but, the world has totally changed, hasn't it? And you see all kinds of people with a smartphone these days. I mean, everyone I know, from all walks of life and all ages, use these things because they're so useful as portable computers. And the things you can do on it is totally astonishing. I mean, 4 years ago, you wouldn't believe that you could get up Google Maps and you could zoom in and get a bird's eye view of, you call up a route, and then you can zoom in and you can see exactly where you're walking, what it looks like on the ground, high definition photographs of the actual terrain and, step-by-step directions. It's totally futuristic. I mean, I was like, it's completely mind-boggling. No one could have imagined that 4 years ago. And I think the same is going to be true in 4 years' time from now. You're saying, there's this problem, there's that problem. Those are problems that exist now. But I think in 4 years, you're going to go, oh my God, it's going to do incredible things.
Well, I look forward to that. And I'm also looking forward to an iPhone 5 with LTE and a 4-inch screen.
Right.
if we end up seeing a 4-inch screen, but
yeah, the iPhone 5 is going to rock. It's going
to
be
I'm not even going to be able to qualify for an upgrade by then. I'm going to have to end up just spending the cash.
Yeah, you're going to have to
pony it up.
I was going to say something really bad, but not suitable for a family podcast. Yeah, and NFC is going to be amazing on that thing. That's really going to make a huge difference.
Oh boy, we could have a whole another 20-minute conversation.
Sometime, because that's going to make wallets and keys electronic. It'll make your keys electronic. That's going to make a huge difference.
Well, we're going to have to save that for another show, because believe it or not, guys, we are actually out of time. So we're going to have to wrap up with that. But hey, thanks everyone for listening to the Cult Cast. The Cult Cast is the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cult Cast come out every Thursday night. If you're interested in hearing any more banter from us, you can follow Leander L. Caney on Twitter. Buster is B3STER.
No, BST3R. It's not hard.
No, it's not. Yet I can't remember it at all. And mine is just at Erfon, ERFON. And of course, you can always follow Cult of Mac on Twitter. That's just Cult of Mac. Thanks for listening to the Cult Cast. We will catch you guys next time. And we're clear.